Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
It's 8 o'clock on Thursday, which means it's time for Peach State Pandemonium. Welcome to the June 6th edition of Peach State Pandemonium. This is Michael Norris, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons. What's going on, guys?
Well, I'm trying to stay dry.
Are you guys getting remnants of that tropical storm that's on the other side of Florida?
Yeah, it's coming up the East Coast.
Ooh. Well, as long as it stops and peters out before it gets to Rhode Island, that's okay.
Well,
oh, man.
Yeah, last night in a 90-minute period, it rained about 2 inches in metro Atlanta. Shut down a couple of the interstates had to shut down because it rained so hard and so fast that it blocked up the drainage systems and the water backed up out onto the interstate. So,
Atlanta's getting the remnants of that storm that was in Oklahoma and Missouri and all that, aren't they?
I have no idea. I just know it's wet.
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's been 68 and sunny and breezy up here in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and I hate it for you guys.
Don't you just buy a home up there since you like it?
I heard that. Delta's ready when you are.
He likes that weather so much.
I got some awful news today. Dick Russell's caught on fire. If anybody's ever been to Mobile to the wrestling reunion, they know what Dick Russell's is. And I just hope that lady that cooks him biscuits wasn't injured.
Well, we can get a direct correspondence report on that from Mobile, Alabama. Hang on just a second. Mr. Joe Turner. Joe, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Bobby was just sharing the bad news of another loss in the wrestling business, Dick Russell. Where were you when this fire happened?
He was probably up there looking for biscuits.
I tell you what, I had
a fire sale.
That biscuit with that bacon and eggs is fantastic.
Ooh,
they'd be sadly missed by a bunch of people.
Yes, they will.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope they reopen.
Well, what they said on the news was that they're going to wait to find out what caused the fire before they even think about trying to build back.
So, well, how badly was it damaged?
I hadn't seen it, but what they showed on TV, it looked like the back half of it was burned up pretty bad. You know, smoke coming out of every joint it could and burnt the edges around it and burned it up pretty good.
I read on the paper today and it said that, or I went online and found the Mobile paper, it said that one of the smokers caught on fire out back, said it was so hot it melted the back door.
Yeah. Well,
Charlie's probably on his way down there to see if they have a fire sale to see if he can get some Leroy Hill coffee.
Mayor, buy them airplanes they had hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, I wonder if that whistle will blow. Put a train whistle up there, you know, you pull.
Oh.
Well, I'm assuming nobody was injured. Were they open for business when this happened? Or?
Yeah, they was open for business. I think one person had pretty good damage from smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, I think most of them got out of there.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, those guys have become, that whole group, especially a handful of those waitresses down there, become family members to us that go to the reunion. something. They look for Charlie. They recognize him right away.
Oh, geez.
Usually they all go to the other side, so they don't have to wait on that
schedule. Usually when there's skills of silverware, they know who he is.
Yeah.
Listen, there's one little girl down there told him. He was messing with her, and he told her, he said, well, my wife will be here tomorrow. We've been married 50 years. And the little girl looked at Charlie and said, well, I want to meet her. He said, I don't know how she's put up with you 50 years. Said, I hadn't known you but 15 minutes, and I can't stand you.
Oh, man. Well, we got another caller here that, you know, all classy shows have correspondence, and now we started the traveling show here being our mobile correspondent, but we actually have a traveling correspondent now. He is the Peach State Pandemonium version of Charles Corral, for those of you old enough to remember him. I'm going to get him on the line with us. Our traveling correspondent, Bo James. How are you doing, Bo?
Oh, I'm doing good. How about everybody else?
Doing great. You hadn't put Jeff McGowan out on the side of the road yet.
Third generation in the wrestling business, and I had to teach him how to check the tires today.
Well, you know, he's been pampered.
He wanted to rest off. Then I pull off, and he was going to run across the field. It was grass up to his navel and go behind the tree. And I said, you have no idea what's in that field over there.
Where are you guys at now? Or where are you at anyway?
Kansas City.
Oh boy.
We're in
some places to go there.
Yeah, I'm at a truck stop, and it's a truck stop, a Western store, a tattoo shop, and a restaurant. Never seen such a thing.
All they need now is a nail salon, and they'll be set.
They may have it in here. They got everything else.
Go in there and ask them if they know Jerry Oates. I'm sure he's been at that truck stop a time or two.
Yeah, that's why he's got my T-shirts hanging up in there.
Yeah. We did a radio interview, the newspaper interview for a town this morning. And the radio man grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and he popped real big when he found out Jeff was Scrappy's son.
Oh, really?
2,000 miles away from Atlanta, and the guy knew Scrappy McGowan.
You know, a legend's a legend.
Yeah, that's the second time that's happened. You know, most people I've talked to couldn't tell you any wrestler on TV today, but they knew who Scrappy McGowan was.
Well, don't say that too loud. He'll be wanting to be sending out there for donations or something.
Yeah, he's liable to be there when y'all get there with a gimmick table under his arm.
Him and Charlie.
Charlie called me the other day, and I said, you ought to go out there with your gimmicks. He said, you go with me? I said, I'll meet you in Kansas City. And he said, nope, I'll come out and pick you up. I don't want any loose ends.
That's exactly what I did the last 2 days, making sure everybody was on that bus. Let me tell you, this is worse than babysitting children.
I'm going to tell you something, Bubba. That's the reason I left the wrestling business. It got to where that office manager thing was like running the daycare center for adults, and I just had had enough.
Yes, sir. So, now I got a good group of kids with us, though. So I think we're going to do a little bit of business out here. And I'm just ready to get it over with and come home. 22,000.
Well, once you get through this trip, you'll have enough experience. You'll be qualified to be a road manager for a musical group. That you talk about babysitting children. I've done that too. And it's about every time I'd get a gig booked, the drummer would quit, or they'd fire the bass player or something that would just like blow everything I worked so hard to do. So.
Oh, yeah. We got 22 towns and 31 days out here. Oh, I feel like I'm in the rifle business again.
Who's doing that?
I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, I talked to guys. The guy that put on that show in Tennessee that paid the boys might have had something to do with it.
Yeah, when Bo gets back off this trip, we're going to change his name from Bo James to Bo Van Fleet.
Exactly.
Hey, I got an 8-man crew, a referee, and a ring announcer. 5 matches, 4 singles and a tag every night.
Well, there you go.
Running towns that ain't been hit in 30 years, and some of them's never been hit. So, like I said, me and Misty and Jake's been working on this deal for a long time, and you know, we worked last night in Wise, Virginia at the county fair. The bus left with 6 of the boys yesterday afternoon. There's 4 of us catching up with them today. So I can't wait to get to that bus. I'm crawling and go to sleep.
Well, have you got a video camera with you?
We have 3 cameras, and we're going to try to
what's going on that bus, because that'd be the best thing. That'd be better than your cars you're running. What's going on the bus?
We're going to try to pitch it as a reality show when we get back.
There you go. Just go to TLC and tell them your next trip out, you want to take Honey Boo Boo with you.
I don't think I'd be going anywhere Honey Boo Boo's at.
Well, no. Gene Bennett's granddaughter would be a good stand-in. We call her Gracie Boo Boo, so she can go right on with you.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna start spreading the word out here that Jerry Oates has got new knees and ready for a comeback out here.
I'm ready.
So, there you go. So, the only thing is, Kansas City's only the halfway point of where we're going.
Where are you going?
Well, I'll tell you in private. That's the other thing we've done for the last year working on this. We have kept it secret. I don't need any Yahoo thinking, well, if they did it, we can do it. I don't want somebody else showing up out here with the rain trying to run some towns. Well, it's just, we got small towns, a few big towns, and mostly medium-sized towns. Went through the Chamber of Commerce and the mayor. I went straight to the top of the cities to get these places. So I've made 8 trips out here in the last 10 years. So I've already got quite an investment in this trip. I'm ready to get paid for it.
Hey.
So, hey, real fast, I want to tell everybody, listen, it's been praying for my mom. We got the news today. She's cancer-free.
Very good.
Yeah, it's she's had 2 major surgeries in the last 2 weeks, but they did the test, checked the lymph nodes and all that stuff that they took out, and all of them are negative, come back cancer-free.
Good.
So,
Let's pass that along for Joyce Grable, because
yeah,
we certainly want to wish her well too. I think she went into Emory today. She posted on Facebook that they had her in a holding cell to get her room ready.
I'm watching these 3 come out of this truck stop that's with me, and they got arms full of groceries. They act like they ain't eating a month. Yeah. I don't know where they're gonna put it in this car.
Geez.
Don't they just need to develop a taste for bologna and American single wrap cheese?
I've been eating peanut butter crackers for the last 780 miles.
Well, good luck to you. I hope you do well, and just keep letting us informed as to what's going on. And
well, we can just make this a you know, an annual or a weekly thing. You know, where in the world is Bo James at this week?
Sort of like, where's Waldo?
Is it? Here's the thing with the 3 kids they got riding with me. They're going to freak out when we get to these towns that they can't get internet service or cell phone service.
I know one of them's mama's going to be freaking out.
I think so. There's a mama that lives 4 miles from me, probably down here knocking on my door. Where's my baby boy?
I got one next door to me, my sister. This is one good thing about this trip. I got my nephew Jake with me, so he graduated high school Saturday before last, and in the last 2 weeks, he's already worked about 4 times in 3 states. And he's going to have close to 40 matches this month. Well, that's more than some of those guys.
I think they have a 12-year career this day of time.
Oh, man. Well, guys, go ahead.
Let me just say the most dangerous thing you've done is left your wife at home, and knowing Charlie Smith knows how to get to your house.
Well, there's a gun in every room.
And she carries a knife, so I guess you're
and safe. And she does carry a knife.
Well, we're watching out for him.
Yeah. I've already got Bobby's picture posted in all the neighborhoods. So if you see this man on the street, you better call me right away.
I sent her an email the other day. I said, he's leaving at 5. I'll be there about 5:01. She says, use the secret door knock where I'll know it's you.
Here's the thing, dude. My nosy neighbors, there's a white pickup sitting in the driveway. One of the boys left there, so I can't wait to hear the rumors when I get home.
Well, that's half the fun of it. Make embellish them, like Ray Stevens used to say. Any lie worth telling is worth embellishing.
Oh man! Hey, what's the gas prices in Georgia?
$3.41 right now here by the house for regular.
Yeah, I've got spoiled East Tennessee there. You know, $3.08 to $3.18. I'm out here, Kansas City, at $3.69. I'm hoping they fall back down. So, well, guys, I'm going to hit the road. We're going to be listening to you.
All right, man.
I'm going to try to do 1,100 miles in 24 hours. So, I'll call everybody. I'll call y'all next Thursday. I'll talk to you before then.
All right, man. Be
all
safe,
right.
Brother. So much.
Be safe.
Careful.
All right, so much.
All right. Bye-bye. It took me 2 days to do 1,032 miles. That was enough. I thought I was out in Oklahoma with Jerry.
Yeah, that wasn't nothing, man.
Oh, man. I left Atlanta, Georgia about 8:15. I left Bobby's house at 8:15 Friday morning. I got checked into a hotel in Dawsonville, Virginia. At about 5:45 that night. Got up the next morning, left Dawsonville at 8:15, and got to West Warwick, Rhode Island at about 4 or 5. And out of that trip, 4 hours of it was between the getting on the Jersey Turnpike and getting to the Rhode Island state line. I told Bobby, I said, I thought I was being smart. After sitting on the Jersey Turnpike in bumper-to-bumper traffic for about an hour, it finally freed up, and I looked down at my gas, and I was coming up on the George Washington Bridge to go through New York, and I thought, well, I got a quarter of a tank of gas. I'll be fine because it'll be bumper-to-bumper going across this bridge, but then it'll free up like it did the last time I went across it. Well, I was wrong. I sat in bumper-to-bumper traffic from the New Jersey side of the George Washington Bridge until I got to the Connecticut state line. And I was almost out of gas when I finally pulled over and was able to get gas 2 miles outside of Stamford, Connecticut. And then I sat in traffic again until I got to the the Rhode Island state line, and so all of a sudden I was by myself. There was nobody else there. It made no sense because we would pick up, you know, and be able to run the speed limit for about 20 minutes or so, and then he'd come to an absolute bog and just sit, and there was no accident, no nothing. So I don't know what it was. And this is 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, so who knows. But I made it here, and I'm glad to be back in the circus business. I tell you, I had missed it. So anybody in the anywhere near Newport, Rhode Island, on June 21st, 22nd, 23rd, the Cole Brothers Circus will be at the Newport Grand. Come see us and have the time of your life. We won't feature Jerry Oates getting shot out of a cannonball, but we've got somebody else to do it. So We'll have to wait till we get back down in around Albany in the fall. Jerry will have to make that trip. What's that?
I told him to do that.
But you have a standing offer. You have a standing offer, but it does seem strange. I picked up the phone a couple of times to call Ron West to ask him a question, but I had to figure it out on my own. I'm missing. But I have Tom Ernesto Jr., so that, that helps. He's just about an hour north of me. He's up in the port of Massachusetts I was in last year.
Well,
so guys, let's take a go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to say, while we're on it, before we go to the break, let's ask everybody that does say their prayers to remember Bill and Polly Sager, our friends from over in Selma.
Yes,
Polly's had to have some surgery and looking at some more procedures to be done here in the near future. And just let's just ask everybody to kind of remember them and their thoughts. Having a pretty rough go right now.
As I mentioned, Joyce Grable earlier, and our friend Al Friend, personal friend, has been having some procedures done as well. I think he had something else done today. Something to do with it. I think it's his feet, or it may be a circulation or diabetes problem or something. But so far, he's been doing well with that. But let's keep him in our thoughts and prayers as well. But anyway, I'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some gimmick matches that may even be better than Weed Eater matches that I've discovered in some of my research this week. But we'll talk about that when we get back.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by Georgia Wrestling.
I'm trying to end the show. Listen to me.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Back. Now, as I said, I was doing some research earlier this week on some type gimmick matches, since we've all had our laughs here in the last couple of weeks about our weed eater matches, and Bobby's proposed a pressure washer match. In an area that you used to work, Jerry, up in Portland, they used to have matches where they would take boards and board around the bottom of the ring, underneath the bottom rope, and fill the ring up with fish and let them wrestle on dead fish.
That never transpired when I was there.
Dead fish.
How would you react if they'd come to you and said, look, Jerry, we want to put you in a halibut match with Ed Wiskowski?
I would tell him, I'm booked in Charlotte. I'm out of here.
Well, even further north, up around Vancouver, they would fill it up, and especially in the wintertime, they'd fill the ring up with snow and let them wrestle in the snow.
Well, nothing tops me and the McGuire twins.
Can you imagine you and the McGuire twins in a halibut match? Of course, they'd have probably eaten all the fish.
Oh, God.
They'd been like sardines to them. But I think Houston, or maybe it was Dallas, they were the king of the gimmicks, even more so than Tennessee.
Can I interject a question here that popped into my head? Since we brought up Jerry and the McGuires, did they dress in that little old dressing room in the auditorium with everybody else? Or did they give them their own place?
You know, Bobby, that's a good question. I don't remember.
I mean, you know, that dressing room, didn't have enough room but to seat about, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 people maybe.
Yeah, they, I just don't remember.
I'm just curious. It just popped in my head. I was just curious.
Were they on their mini bikes, Jerry?
No.
They weren't?
No.
I said if they were on their mini bikes, they probably dressed wherever they were staying and just came as they were.
Jeez.
Oh, that has been a horrible life, huh?
They used to wrestle in those big denim outfits, those blue denim outfits.
Oh, yeah, I remember that like it was last night. They looked like they were inmates. That's what they look like.
They didn't ask you to dress in one of those outfits so you'd match them?
No. I thought I was going to die. You know what I'm saying?
Welcome home, Jerry.
Yeah, welcome back home to Columbus.
Oh, man. I think it was all a rip on you. Where were you? You were in Dallas, right?
I come back from Dallas.
With Leo?
Yeah.
That's what it was. Leo called Fred Ward.
No, see, this is the truth now. Now, Lord knows I like Leon Ogle. I do. I really do. I thought he was the best of the bunch. And Mr. Ward was okay. Once I got to know Mr. Ward was fine. And, you know, Ralph was Ralph. They didn't have enough sense of humor to pull a rib like that. I'm serious. I mean, you think about it. I'm not being funny, Jerry. They didn't. They didn't. That wasn't a rib. They thought they'd draw money.
You might have had something to do with it.
No, sir. You know. I never worked with them. Never saw them. I met whichever one outlived the other one. I met him in Mobile. He came to the reunion one year, and I sat back there and talked to him. And he was a heck of a nice guy. He just, you know, but I never worked with him, never even seen him till then.
But
I did get to work with Happy Humphrey now.
I never even met him.
Well, I had the pleasure.
You know, Humphrey, Philly Hines and Harley Race both had the pleasure of being his driver early in their careers.
Yeah, Harley told me that story. His exact words, I used to haul the fat man around. That was his exact words.
Oh, man. Well, Bobby, you met him after he was in the Guinness Book of World Records because he lost all that weight and then gained it all back.
Yeah. He come in, I met him in 73, I guess. might have been 74, 73, 74. He came in for about a 2-week run. He made all the spot shows in the big towns working for Ann. You know, they put him in a battle royal. But the first time I was ever in the ring with him, the referee didn't show up, and I had the referee. And we were working, it was in that Quonset hut in Murphy, North Carolina. And he wouldn't fit in the dressing room. He couldn't get through the door in the dressing room, so they had to they spread a quilt out in a corner of the room and put it. He was sitting at a picnic table on a picnic table behind this quilt because he couldn't get in the dressing room.
He was from Macon, wasn't he?
Macon, yeah.
Yeah. Macon, Georgia. William Cobb was his name. He was from Macon. I guess the first time I know of him working was in 60 or so. He came into Mobile. Well, there was one behind. Well, he wasn't quite as big, but did you guys ever work with, what was his name? Mighty something or other.
Jumbo?
Jumbo, yeah, Mighty Jumbo.
Saw him when I was a kid, but I never worked with him. He wasn't nowhere big as Humphrey, though.
No. Or Haystack or Man Mountain Mike. Of course, Haystack lost a lot of weight. By the time the 70s rolled around, he was still being billed at 600 pounds, but he was more like 350 or so.
Yeah.
And he was the only one out of all of them that really he could work a decent match.
I'm going to tell you something. I enjoyed every time he came into territory. I liked Haystacks.
He was a nice man.
He was a super nice man. I loved sitting in the dressing room and talking to him. You know, he always rode by himself, him and his dog. He had a big international.
That's what he rode.
And he'd drive that thing, him and his dog, but he was just a super guy.
Yeah, I made a many mile with him. I really liked him.
You're talking about hauling, they haul them around. I tell you a guy that I got hooked up with when he came into Georgia. He was only here for a couple of weeks, and he was a big fella. But when Chris Taylor came in here.
He was a monster, wasn't he?
Me and Chris Taylor kind of, Tom asked me to take him to Augusta that first night, and me and him kind of hit it off. I mean, he was just a kid. He was just a big, strong, country boy, I guess. He was a nice guy, and he rode with me. I don't know how the 2 weeks he is here. He's probably with me 10 or 11 days. Super guy. I tell you what, he gave me a whole new respect for that big Russian. When I looked at him and I know that Russian went behind him and suplexed him, I thought, boy, I don't want to run into him.
Well, either one of you guys ever work with the Plowboy?
Tiny Frazier?
Yeah.
I never worked with him. I was in a ring. I refereed.
You didn't buy a watch from him or anything, did you?
Nope. No, I wanted to know. Where did he work?
Oh, Lord. He worked a lot more places than people remember. Of course, he was local in Mobile. He was from Pascagoula.
That's right.
But he worked out in Omaha as Giant Frazier. He worked in California under the hood as the Convict.
His first time through Georgia in the 60s, he was the Convict here.
Yeah, he also worked in Georgia in the mid 60s as Big Ed Younger, and he had a feud going with Tex McKenzie. If you can imagine those two in the ring together.
Jeez.
He worked Mobile as Ed Younger. He was a spinoff with the Daltons, with Fargo and them as the Daltons. He worked as Ed Younger because that was an old outlaw name. And of course, he worked in New York. He worked in Tennessee a lot. Worked in Montgomery for Billy Golden. Like I said, he worked a lot more places than people realize. Everything, but I'll say he appeared in more places. I don't know if he ever learned to work real well. But and of course he came back. He worked for Fuller in the early '80s, and then had that run in Georgia when Robert Fuller was booking there. How or they brought him in and thought they could make money with him? I don't know, but I guess he did okay with Freebirds. You were around then, Bobby.
Yeah, we never did okay. It was never, you know. But I can assure you, one of the funniest things, if I made a top 10 list, this would be in the top three. The funniest thing I ever seen in my life was in the Omni in Atlanta, Georgia, when him and Robert Fuller was wrestling Ole and Gene. And Gene come out there and put his hand up to do the test of strength thing.
Yeah.
Son, that Gene short-fingered him and cinched up on it, and Gene fell on his knees settling, and that Frazier was on his tiptoes screaming like somebody had shot him. He was killing him. And Gene just, I was sitting there at the table by the ring, Gene just winking at me. Oh, it was funny.
Well, Joe, he was your roommate for a while, wasn't he, Joe?
Yeah, we were. In Huntsville, Alabama, we shared an apartment, Bill and I and him. And that's quite interesting. He can cook. And we met a disc jockey that was going to college down in Hattiesburg. We was making interviews down there named Vic Rumor. And anyway, we saw him when he got a job up there in Huntsville. So he started hanging out with us, and Tanny was cooking all the time. Well, Vic Rumor would come by and go to the refrigerator, and he'd eat up all the groceries. And so Tanny Frazier told me, because Vic called over and said he's coming by, and he said, I'm going to fix it tonight. He got two cans of Alpo dog food, and he put on a saucer. And when Vic got there, he said, well, I sure would like to have something to eat. You got anything good in there? And Tanny says, oh, yeah, on that saucer, man, make you a sandwich after that. He's got some good stuff. And he went in there, and he made two sandwiches, sitting at the coffee table and ate them. Got up and made him two more. And while he's eating them, the last two, Tanny bought the apple, the dog food can, and set them down in front of him. We got a lot of publicity out of that because he got on the air, and he was a pretty proper show he had on there. And he'd bark and make jokes about it and talk about it. He almost got hit by a car because he started walk across the street, turn around, start chase his tail, and all kinds of stuff.
Well, he was involved. That just made me think. He was involved with a program with you and Bill when you guys were the interns in Mobile. They brought him in to be a special referee.
Yeah.
And then I think they booked him and Jerry Graham. He was the convict at that point. They booked him and Jerry Graham together, and Graham beat him and unmasked him.
Yeah.
He was, a lot of people don't realize he was a good singer, too. He used to, he was a bouncer at a place right there on the state line. The name of the place was called the State Line. But he was singing there, too. And there was a place called the Red Barn that he used to sing at.
He sang a lot of places.
Yeah.
One time we was in Nashville, Tennessee, and I can't remember the group, but I think it was Obama playing at this nightclub before they got famous. But anyway, we was on Murfreesboro Road, and we went to a club, and Tanny wasn't much for in a club or anything, getting any fights in them. So when you walk in this club, you have to walk in a little foyer-like thing and step down about 10 inches and go on the dance floor, went right down the middle of the club, and you sit on each side, and in the corner was the bandstand. So Tiny and I were sitting there, and he got to let him sing, and he got there and sing. So when we started to leave, he said, let me thank him for singing before we go, Joe. I said, okay. So we walked over there. They're putting their music instruments up, and there was one boy up there still on the bandstand, and there's guys had two tables pulled together, and they was arguing with him. And so they got up like they was going to jump on him, but he ran between me and Tiny. And Tiny says, that guy says, you ain't do no good to have to hide behind them SOBs, because we'll kick their butts, too. And Patty looked at me and he said, "You ready to do it? Let's go." So we started fighting. I'd hit one, knock him down, and Tiny would draw that big old leg back and said, "Field goal," and kick him, and they'd go all the way across the floor. He'd knock one down, do the same thing to him, and got pretty rough there for a while because the waitress in there jumped on our back and had us around the neck trying to get us to stop. So we fought all the way to that little four-year deal, and we got them girls off our back, and whenever we started up that little four-year deal, here come the police in. But it's kind of dark in that club, so the police come in and say, "Hold it, there ain't nobody leaving here." Says, "That's where we find out what's going on." I looked at the police, I said, "Sir, I'm so glad to see y'all here. Joker's trying to kill each other back there, and we're trying to get out of here." And they said, "Well, go ahead, we'll take care of this." We ran, I got the car and left. We've had quite a bit of experience with Tiny.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, that's who you need to sing with. The McGuire twins, you should have been there with Frazier.
You know, the McGuire twins used a thing they call a steamroller. And what they'd do is when they'd get you down, they would do that big splash on you. Then they'd roll all that weight from the top of your head, right by your chin, all the way down to your toes, then roll back. But everything worked fine until it gets to your knees. Them suckers don't bend backwards very well. Next time we work for them, they're talking about that steamroller. I say, "Ain't no way."
The wrestling world has Gordy Guerrero to thank for them.
Yeah.
They were working for Honda or Kawasaki or whoever had those motorcycles that they were traveling. They were traveling across country on them for the publicity stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, of course, they would stop in each town and spend the night and then get up and go a little bit further the next day. Well, they stopped in Corpus Christi, Texas, and they were at a Honda dealership there. And Gordy Guerrero was the promoter there. And he went there and offered them to get in the wrestling business. And that's how we ended up with them.
Uh-huh.
Is anybody getting a horrible echo from Michael other than me?
Well, I'm getting it from you, too. I'm getting it from everybody.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Well, let me mute this real quick and see if that's when we come back if it's any better. Is that any better?
Much better.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be echoing. It's Joe's phone. That's what it is. When I put him back on, it starts echoing.
Well, it's doing it again now.
Yeah, it's Joe's phone. Joe, you got us on speaker or something?
Yeah, I turned the speaker part off.
Okay, that's what it is.
See if that helps.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
There you go. That's good.
Okay. I'm glad y'all sold it. Tiny Frazier.
Jerry, go ahead, Jeff.
Tiny Frazier, he got around pretty good, but Tiny's problem was he's a moody person, and he went to Japan, and they was going to use him quite a bit. He could make big bucks over there. And he got over there and started griping about the bids and all that kind of stuff. They finally said, "The heck with him." And,
I had no idea he went over there.
Yeah, that's what Nelson Morris was telling me. He said they had big plans for him over there. And said he griped so much, I said, "The heck with him. We don't want him back. They're going to bring him out, you know, on a regular basis."
I guess he couldn't sell his imitation Seikos over there.
I'm not going to tell it on there, but he had a lot of deals with stuff else. Yeah. But he was a character. He was a character.
He had a ton of gimmicks, too, he worked. Of course, best known by most people that remember him as Uncle Elmer up there working for Vince. But he must have done 1,000 different gimmicks in Memphis in the late 70s, early 80s. They even had him as Kamala, too. He would dress like Jim Harris did as Kamala, even with the stars and moons on his belly, and he was a white Kamala.
Oh, jeez.
Do you remember the black guy that wrestled down here said he's from Africa, Michael?
Armand Hussein?
Yeah, Armand Hussein. They was in some territory when he done the convict thing. And Armand Hussein and them was going to wrestle each other. And that's when they had that publicity all over the United States about some black girl that been killed up in around Atlanta there. And Armand told me, he says, "Man, you ever seen the house we draw? I got on there and told him that I know for a fact that he had something to do with that. And I'm going to take care of him tonight." So anyway, he laughed and I got out of the building. He pulled a lot of different things, though. He's on phone there?
Yeah, he died 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
Were you ever around him when he talked in a straight voice and didn't kayfabe with that African accent?
When he was in the hospital up in Mississippi, when he had that wreck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, you know, I had some people lived out there in Thomasville that come up to me and said, "That Joe Green from Africa, he lives out there by me."
Well, he was from Houston originally.
Yeah.
But every time I was ever around him, he talked in that accent.
He played the part now.
He was a good worker.
Yeah, that's when I saw him, he had a bad heel and couldn't hardly walk.
Well, he had gone back to Dallas and was living in Dallas, and Fritz used him as a manager out there. He would work every once in a while, like a special stipulation match or something, but mainly he was a manager. And then when Fritz folded, he got involved with blues musicians. He was, I don't know if he was managing them or putting on concerts, promoting concerts or whatever it was, but he was well known in Dallas on the blues scene out there, as much as he was for wrestling. So
he told me one time, that last time I saw him, that he was living in Mexico too.
Oh, really?
Had something going on there, but I'd pee about it sometime, but I've never seen him again after that.
Rocket told me they did a deal one time over somewhere in Mississippi where Rocket did a run-in on him, where he was going to run in, jump on him when he was down or something. And Rocket said he was sitting in the back, chewing tobacco, watching the match, and he said when he got time to go, he forgot to spit the tobacco out. And he said he went running in the ring and said Hussein was laying on the mat, and said he was laying there with his mouth open, and Rocket said he got right over the top of him, and he said he'd never do it again, but he said he just took that wad of tobacco and eased it out of his jaw and just let it go, and he said it wrung Hussein's mouth. And said when it did, he said, of course, he turned over, started gagging and throwing up, and said the people at ringside thought he had poisoned him, but he said he had to fight his way out of the ring and get back to the dressing room.
Rocket said people were screaming, "Call the FBI, he's poisoned."
That makes me think about Billy Hines in Dothan, Alabama. They knocked him out right there at the dressing room door by the ring. And so anyway, Graham had a can of beer, and he walked over and held it up above the door where they couldn't see it, and he poured it. Billy's laying there knocked out. And when that beer hit his mouth, he opened his mouth and started licking his lips. Uh I saw the big guy that was really big at the end there, Jerry Graham. There's so many stories about him, you could do about a 3-month show on him.
Yeah, me and Debbie were talking last night about different people, and somehow he came up. And I told her, I said, that guy, we talk about having it, whatever it is. That's one guy that could walk in a building and get heat and never open his mouth. All he had to do was walk through the room.
Uh-huh.
He just, there was something about him.
Yeah. Well, he's seen so much and done so much. You ought to hear some of them stories. I know you've heard some of them, but, there's thousands of them on him. It's unbelievable. But he knew the business well. Give him credit for that.
Yeah, he's been to the top and back.
Yeah, he has. He used to get them boys up there in New York. He used to get them boys to come. They like me, brought a bunch of guys out of Mexico.
Yeah.
And use them up there, and they wouldn't make any money. And he used to give them $100 bills just to take care of their family. There's some good in everybody.
Yeah.
Sometimes hard to find, but there's good in everybody.
I come from Columbus one time. I was in Columbus, and I had to go to Athens, and Jerry Ted rode with me. We went to Athens, and while we was there, Charlie Smith had brought Jerry Graham to the building in Athens. Well, on the way up there, Jerry Graham decided to use the bathroom in Charlie's car. So Charlie refused to bring him back. So Tom tells me I got to bring him back. And I said, Tom, we ain't going to Atlanta. We're going to Columbus. He said, you got to take him back. So me and Ted had to come all the way downtown with him to bring him back. And we pulled in. He was staying at the Imperial Hotel, which was right up the Domino Lounge, which was a rather seedy place, right downtown Atlanta, was on the lower level of this hotel. And we pulled in the parking lot, and he jumped out, went to screaming and cussing, and a guy came out of the parking deck, had two guns, looked like Wyatt Earp. He had a gun in each hand. And me and Ted liked to knock each other out getting in the floorboard. Oh, he was a piece of work.
Oh, he was.
I don't know how y'all stayed with him so long, man. That's the only time he ever rode with me.
Well, he didn't care where he used the bathroom.
No.
He'd go in a place and get a pitcher of beer and drink it, then put it on the table and pee in. he done that in the restaurant, Dothan, and the Fields brothers was in there. I don't know. He did a lot of things. Just wild and didn't care. He had some good stories, though.
I can imagine.
I can tell this one. He told me one time he bought a bottle of champagne back in the 50s for $250. And I said, Graham, what in the world do you want to pay $250 for a bottle of champagne? He said, man, it had gold flakes in it. And I said, why would you want a bottle of champagne with gold flakes in it? And he said, well, he said, I always wanted when I go to the bathroom to pass some gold.
Jeez.
I was just, that's his way, that's his mentality. And I heard he really had a doctorate in psychology.
Well, I know he did. Before he got real well known, he traveled quite a bit, and he did the hypnotist gimmick. He had a swami with him, and he would hypnotize the swami and make him stiff as a board. Then he'd pick him up over and lift him up over his head and everything. He did that in Mobile the first time he came to Mobile in the early 50s, and so that was. And then he had an old timer by the name of Mike Chacoma owned a bear. And they would travel around with that bear a lot, too.
So he'd come up with some gimmicks, but one time, when he was managing us, he'd sit on that corner and smoke a cigar. And he'd sit there right up under the ring post. And I'm climbing up there and on the top rope. I was jumping somebody illegally. And so I get up there, and I think it was Ramon Perez reached over and grabbed his rope and shook the rope, and I fell off on top of his head. So any time that I start climbing ropes, he'd get out of his chair and move halfway down the road. He wasn't going to sit under that.
Well, I know he burned Ramon with that cigar on TV and nearly got you guys thrown off TV.
Oh, yeah. Ramon just laying there selling something, and he took that cigar and stuck it to him. He sold it to him.
Maybe he did.
Because I seen Jerry when he got the cigar and put it in his mouth, and he took some big drags on it to fire it up, you know. And he just came, stuck it over and stuck him with it.
Yeah, he was. He was a very good worker for such a small guy. And half time he wasn't sober.
Yeah.
Of course, it just didn't get him going.
I remember one time we had a lot of outdoor shows down here. We were coming back from somewhere over in Florida. And we had to come back to Pensacola. So anyway, the show got canceled because of the bad weather. And so on the way back, Ramon had a real good-looking girl that was a nurse. He was living with him. And so McGuire was ribbing everybody. Man says, old lady's expecting back. Y'all better call home if you don't want to catch him or somebody. So when they got almost to Pensacola, they stopped to get some more beer. And they went in to get beer. Ramon went to the phone and called home. And McGuire said, what are you doing? He said, I don't want to catch my old lady with nobody. He's calling home. Better know he's coming. But I really like him. There's a boy that does TV here. Michael, you might have seen him. His last name's Perez. And he looks so much like him. It's unreal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Ramon, his name was Ronaldo Nieves was his real name. And,
I got
in contact with his niece or nephew or somebody contacted me about 10 years ago, was asking me about him or asked me if I had pictures of him. And it was his niece because she told me about him. He died of cirrhosis of the liver. He's been dead 20, 25 years, a long time. He was always a good worker. I never got to see him and Roberto together.
That's a good team.
You and Bill.
That's a good team.
But I was glad. Jerry, were you ever around Jerry Graham?
I only met him one time, Mike. I met him at Ted's house, Columbus.
Oh, really?
That's the only time I was ever around him.
What was he doing at Ted's house?
Eating.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know how Ted wound up with him, but around Stanley's drive.
Dickie was probably behind that.
I don't know.
Here, you go with Ted. I got something to do.
I seen Graham go talking about eating. I seen Graham, he took us to a restaurant right here in Mobile. The steakhouse used to be on Government Street. And he had some money off of insurance he got twice. And he'd leave it in his glove box, not even lock his door. And he had about $10,000-$12,000 in there. And he said, boys, if y'all want any of that money, ask for it. Don't just get it. And then Bill told him, we don't want any of your money. But anyway, we got to the steakhouse, walked in the door and sit down, and he wouldn't take us out to eat. So when the waitress come over, and then he says, and they had a little bar back in the corner, and he says, bring everybody a drink. So they got everybody a drink in there, and so when she come back, she says, you ready to order? He says, yes. He says, bring us your biggest steaks. and bring everybody in here one. He just threw money like it was, he said one time, money's nothing but like confetti just on paper, you know. And he'd spend it. If he had it, he'd spend it. Done a lot of crazy things. Yeah, I'm not sure. We've all heard the story about him stealing his mother's corpse out of a funeral home in Arizona.
It's a hospital.
Was it the hospital? Okay, yeah.
It's in the morgue at the hospital. And they called him up and told him to come up there. And he come up there and they told him his mother died. And he said, no, my mother's not dead. And anyway, he says, where's she at? And they took him down to the morgue, and when they got him in there and they pulled that drawer out, you know, let him look at his mother, he grabbed up through his shoulder and says, y'all just not treating my mama. He go take her somewhere else. And when he went out the door, security tried to stop him. And so they got out there and kind of surrounded him, trying to hope they'd stop him. Well, he pulled a gun out and started shooting at him. And told him he'd taken his mama with him, but his mama was so well off, she could call the White House anytime she wanted to. And Graham, for Scoutmaster, I think is Goldwater or one of them guys that's so well known in politics, was his Scoutmaster when he was a kid. And so they had a lot of inside pool.
Jeez.
And he wound up in the wrestling business. Yeah. Yep. Oh, man. He'd wear them torsion tights anywhere. He didn't care where it was at. I was with him one time. He pulled up in front of a place and parked right in the front door. And the guy that's on the door come out, and there's a club thing. And he says, you can't park there, sir. He says, oh, yeah, I can. No, sir, you can't park there. I'm telling you. He just walked, gave him the keys and $20 bill. He said, go park it for me then. And that's just the way he operated.
Where else but our business could people like that exist?
I don't know.
People like him, Don Fargo. You think all the stories between Jerry Graham, Don Fargo, Galento, Sputnik, Billy Hines, any other business, they'd have had these people locked up.
Oh, yeah.
We made stars and heroes out of them.
Well, I tell you what a girl told me from Pensacola, Florida one time. She says, I think we have to keep quit coming to matches. That's pretty well off. And I said, why is that? She said, well, our daddy don't want us coming anymore. And I said, why is that? And she says, well, it's just like a fair or a circus over there. And I said, I don't know how you get that. And just stop and think about it. You got bears, you got fat people, skinny people, all screwed up people and all that. So that's the reason he thinks that. I didn't say a word. I couldn't answer that one. The
only thing missing was a bearded lady. And Mula may have had one of those somewhere along the way.
Yeah, you know the one I remember the most of the women, that angel, whatever name, had a head shape.
The lady angel.
Yeah.
Eva Huckabee was her name, yeah.
Yeah, I always remember that. That's the first time I've seen a woman without hair.
Yeah, she came through Mobile a couple times. And there was another one that they tried to, because the Lady Angel was a Pfeffer girl. She was one of Pfeffer's girls.
Uh-huh.
And then she was got so popular that somebody else started using another bald-headed girl. And somehow or another, they convinced her to quit calling herself the Lady Angel. She started calling herself Yulee Brynner, after Yul Brynner. Yeah. Well, they could have had a match between the two of them with the loser had to grow hair.
Well, I know where the name of the movie came from now. It just dawned on me. Jerry Maguire.
I think that's aimed at you, Jerry.
He just dropped the phone.
I did.
We give him so much abuse, he's going to quit doing the show with us before too much more.
I'm used to it, believe me.
Oh.
Jerry Maguire.
Hey, listen. You can call me, as long as you use that other line in the movie, show me the money. Call me whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's what it was about.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Even though you weren't thinking that and you were in that six-man tag team, man, you weren't thinking about how much money you were making at that point.
I would give them money not to put me in that match.
I'll have to, next time I see Ron Garvin, I'll have to ask him, because I know he couldn't have been happy being in there with him.
He's probably already set from his memory.
Terry probably didn't care, and Jimmy was...
Well, Ronnie told the story he liked to choke one of them to death. He tied one of them up in the ropes or something, and the guy got hung. He was, like, dying, and they had to get over and untie
him. Oh, it was, listen...
I was talking about Happy Humphrey a while ago. You know, Ben Hand rode him around for a while, too.
Yeah.
And he told me stories about him. And you see, he had to sit in the middle of the seat in the back and sit straight up. And he had to sleep sitting up. He had cut his wind off. So they left some town, and Billy got with Renesto, because Renesto was wearing a mask all the time. And so he come up, there's a red light back then that pulls you, but he come up with a red light, flashing red light, and they got out on the road, and he didn't know what Renesto looked like. So Billy had him pull him over and get out like he was a policeman. But he turned the light on, and Billy wouldn't pull over. So, and Huffer said, Billy, pull over, down, pull over. And kept on doing that away, so finally Billy act like he talked him into pulling over. Then Ernesto gets out with a gun and comes up there. Well, when I turned that light on, I mean, for y'all to stop. He just kept on, and Billy said, hell with you. And old Humphrey back, Billy, shut up now. Shut up. And so Billy, they argued back and forth, so finally Billy took off. So Ernesto come in behind him and flashing his lights, and he's shooting up in the air. Humphrey was crying, boy. He was like everything. And it's not, they gonna kill us.
yeah. Any of you guys, you were talking about Ronnie Garvin nearly choking one of McGuire's. Ole did that to in the Carolinas to another guy that was, he wasn't quite as well known. He was a knockoff of Haystack Calhoun. He was a Pfeffer creation, Haystack Muldoon. You guys remember him?
I remember the name.
I miss that one.
His name was Bill Toohey. And, well, he worked as Haystack Muldoon, and then after a while he dropped that and just called himself the Ozark Mountaineer. But he was another one like that that wore the overalls and all that. I think it was in Ole's book or what it was, but he was talking about he had a match with him. He got tired of the guy just laying around and not doing anything, so he worked him over to the ropes and tied his head in the ropes and tried to choke him. oh, man. That's some strange characters come through our business.
Yeah, there is. And there was.
But the thing is, most of them made money or drew money. At least, you know, they couldn't stay in a territory because people would get tired of seeing them. But, you know, as special attractions, most of them did pretty good to come in and make money for whoever. I don't know if what was the basketball player's name, Bobby? The Globetrotter, Sky High something?
Oh, Sky High Clark.
Sky High Clark.
He didn't last 2 weeks.
He didn't draw any money either, did he?
Oh, he was horrible.
Did he?
First night in Augusta, the first night he's in the territory, he walks in the dressing room, and he opened his bag up. He had a little old bag, and he opened it up, and he had a brand new pair of Hildegard boots that had never been laced up and a brand new pair of trunks. And nobody said nothing, but we all just looked. And everybody's wondering who had to go with him.
Well, where'd he come from? I mean,
that was a Renesto creation, I'm assuming. I'm not sure where he came from, but that's probably sometime in early to mid 74 when things were starting to go south for us. And we were trying. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know. Like I say, I don't know what happened between Tom and Barnett, but anyway, it was at the point where you know, things were, they were trying to do almost anything, and they'd advertised this guy as a former Harlem Globetrotter for 2 weeks. And he come in there, and within the first week, him and Zulu had gotten a confrontation with each other. It was horrible.
Well, I mean, this was it, his territory here, and that was it, wasn't it?
That's it. He didn't make it 2 weeks here. I never heard of him anywhere else. And then they booked, you know, we talked about this before. We had a deal where we used two referees in tag matches.
Right.
So you had two referees and four guys, you know. Well, they booked a match in Atlanta with him as a special referee, and I was the other referee in a tag match. And Jody put me in the corner. He backed me in the corner and said, "Don't move." And I said, "Okay." But the other guy wasn't doing nothing, so I eventually came out of the corner, and Jody looked at me and said, "I told you to get in that corner and not move." "Yes, sir." So I went back to my corner. And they were trying, it was Jody's way of telling me, "Hey, we're fixing to try to bury this guy." But, you know, it was just, oh, it was awful.
And then you had Super Soul Davis as the main eventer.
Yep, against Ernie Ladd.
That didn't kill the territory. Nothing. Don Serrano against Ernie Ladd.
Yeah, that was about the end of it, wasn't it?
Well, it was. Yeah, we were getting right down toward the end. Yeah. Yeah, we were getting toward the end.
Don Serrano didn't reach 5 feet.
You know, we had. You know, Joe, and when did you leave, Joe? Y'all left in what, early 74, late 73?
It was somewhere in the early 70s. I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Because the split came in November of 72, and I think Bill had gone to selling cars, and you had left, and you know, it was just, I don't know. I mean, I look back on those days. I was very fortunate. I started with a bunch of the top talent in the business at the time that I was able to learn from, and, but, you know, I mean, I got to work with, you know, be in the ring with Bob Ellis and with Ernie Ladd and with Dickie and Jody and Tom and Rock Hunter and Bill and Joe. And, even the guys, you know, when the split came, even the guys that were working underneath were top hands. I mean, you know, guy that never got a lot of praise was, you know, Oki Shekina. Man, what a
yeah.
piece of talent he was.
You had Oki Shekina, John Foley.
John Foley,
yeah.
John Black was here for a while.
Yeah.
God, I'm trying to think who else. Tully Blanchard was here. I think this is the first place Tully ever came outside of, you know, his dad's territory.
I didn't realize Tully had worked that early.
Oh yeah, he was here.
He had been. Just a kid still in college then.
Oh, could very well have been, because I got a picture somewhere here in the house of Dick and Tully and myself helping Ted out of the ring after one of his Wayne Cowan confrontations.
Yeah.
There was a host of guys came through here for when that thing first went down, but.
Whatever, Ernesto, he really ribbed Wayne McCown. Wayne Cowan, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
He ribbed that poor boy. I always like to wonder where he went to the toll booth and he's supposed to throw the change. And Ernesto kept on telling him, "Don't miss it. And, you know, they'll get you, boy," and all kinds of stuff, you know. And he had Wayne Cowan so nervous when he threw it, half of it went on the ground.
speaking of which, I just looked on and found a card from Columbus from June 4th of 1973 at Golden Park. The main event was a 15-man over-the-top battle royal featuring Happy Humphrey.
Yep. was
Georgia
Jim Wilson Dagen, on that card?
I don't know. Let me read off the rest of the card. Georgia Tag Team Championship, The Assassin and Rock Hunter versus Ray Candy and Argentino Apollo. A cage wire match, Ted Oates versus Wayne Cowan. Oki Shekina versus El Mongol. The Avenger versus Carl Carlson. Which event? This wouldn't have been Torres, was it?
That's Swede Carlson.
No, the Avenger that was working with Paul.
That was Flores.
Francisco Flores. Okay. John Black versus Jesse James. That must be when Bill McMahon tried to get his autograph. And Carl Kaiser versus Dizzy McShane. Now, Dizzy McShane was a guy that always worked in the Carolinas, worked Outlaws in the Carolinas. Carl Kaiser, the only thing I can think of is maybe Don Hunsinger, who worked as Carl Krauser, and they just spelled him wrong. But he died later in 73, so I don't know if that was him or not. But that's
I don't remember.
A sampling of who all was working.
We worked at that ballpark one time. The reason I asked if Jim Wilson was on the card, we worked there, and the Columbus Astros were in town. They just happened to be off that Monday night. So we worked. There was something going on in the auditorium. I don't remember what was happening, but anyway, we worked the ballpark there. And because the Columbus Astros were in town, they only had two locker rooms, and of course they were both being used by the ball team, so they wouldn't let us use them. So the guys had to go dress. My girlfriend at the time, before I got married, lived there, so I stayed with her parents when I was in town there. So I had dressed at home, but the guys were dressed. Dick had got two rooms over at the Heart of Columbus Motel there on the. What would that have been back then? Manchester Expressway or
Fourth Avenue?
Fourth Avenue, yeah, and Heart of Columbus there. So you know, it's probably we always started at 8:15 there in Columbus. So I guess it's probably 7:30 or so. Jim Wilson shows up. Well, he was kind of on another plane from the rest of us when he got there, and they explained to him he had to go over to the Heart of Columbus Motel and change clothes, so he went over there. Well, he was on, like, the semifinal in some kind of tag match. Well, by the time the intermission came, before it was time for his match, he wasn't back yet. So they had to send somebody over to see what was wrong with him. When they got over there, he was sitting in the hotel room reading the newspaper. He had forgot what he went over there for.
I can believe that.
That's the truth. He had to get dressed and bring him back over. Well, he had forgot what he went. He was sitting over reading the paper. Mm-hmm. I guess he thought somebody got him a room for the evening.
Oh, man.
He passed away not too long ago, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
A couple years ago.
The way things are going, I'm not going to want to come in to a wrestling reunion.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
I'm a little old.
Jeez.
Okay. Of course, I got longevity, but I don't know if I'm going to make it. My dad did. But I don't know if I'm going to make it down long. Don't know if I want to.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
But anyway, I'm not.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I really enjoy that one we go to in September.
On Tennessee?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby's going to make his debut.
I was invited. I'm going up this year.
Good.
Yeah, I sent Mr. Teal a note, appreciated the invitation, told him I would gladly accept. I told him it wasn't necessary for a red carpet, but some dancing girls would be nice.
Yeah. The first time we went up there, we stayed in some motel and Charlie Smith stayed in, and the motorcycle gang come checked in. I don't know.
Did Charlie try and sell them gimmicks?
I don't know. I'm scared to go out the
door. Bobby doesn't know, but that's why he's going. Charlie's going to set up a gimmick table in the corner of Scott Field's backyard, and Bobby's going to have to man it for him.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Scott T and his wife are very good hosts. We really enjoy going up there. They're good hosts.
Yeah, Scott's invited me to come a couple times. Of course, it's always been during the season where I can't break free. And in September, I'm usually somewhere in South Georgia, South Alabama, Louisiana. So it's hard for me to do that. But hopefully one day we'll get up there. I'm just glad that Ken Lucas went last year, and hopefully he'll go again at some point.
I think he will. He really enjoyed that.
That's good. That's good. I know he got to see a lot of people he hasn't seen in a long time, like Dennis Hall and people like that.
Oh, yeah, he loved that Dennis Hall. He's cutting up with him so much. And all, he just loved it because he's picking at him a lot. But, hey, I'm pretty sure he's going to go with me.
What you ought to do is make tell Scott not to feed Ken until about midnight that night and fix him a plate of spaghetti. Tell him it's from Jerry Oaks.
That's right. Lucas, he was the biggest rubber I was ever around.
Yeah, he still likes it. He tries.
I told you what he did to Roberto Soto that day that Bill Bowman and Roberto and I went to go visit him. That was before Ken's dog passed away. He told Soto, he said, "Soto, I'm going to show you how smart my dog is." He said, "Ask the dog where the cows are." And you know how Soto is. He's so terrified of somebody pulling a rib on him. He said, "I'm not going to do that." He said, "No, seriously, Dad, I want to show you how smart the dog is. Ask the dog where the cows are and he'll bark." So he kept on. Finally, Roberto said, "Hey, dog, where's the cows?" The dog just looked at him. And Roberto said, "See, I told you that dog wasn't smart." Ken said, "Well, do you see any cows around here?" Of course, Roberto got hot.
No.
Oh, man.
Speaking of ribs, we have not had a show since the Ronnie West Memorial Service.
Yeah, that's true.
The last laugh, Jerry Oates.
What did he do?
We're standing there. I mean, I'm emotional. I cry over anything. And when I found out Ronnie passed, I cried for 2 weeks. I'd think about something and just bust out crying. So we're there that day. You know, seeing people there that you hadn't seen in a while, and you know, Joe drove up from Alabama, and Bob and Chris Kelly was there, and Tom Pritchard came down, and I mean there was a bunch of people there, and we were enjoying seeing each other, but it was a sad time, and I told my wife on the way up there I was worried about it. I was hoping I didn't break up, I didn't get, you know. So finally, Rodney says, "I need to talk to you," and he called me off to the side. Now, you got to picture this. We come in this little church where this thing was, and up at the front table, they've got Ronnie's referee shirt laid out. They've got his Bible laying on top of it. On the other side of this table, Ronnie had a white suit that he wore when he was on the midway at the circus. It said Cole Brothers on the back of it. And they had that on the other side. And in the middle of the table, they had this little box. You know, they had Ronnie cremated. So Rodney calls me off to the side, and he goes, "Bobby, he said I need to talk to you." And I said, "Well, yeah, what's the problem?" He said, "Well, it's not a problem." He said, you know, when you guys were on the road," and he said, "somebody would pass away in your family or somebody you knew," and he said, "either, you know, somebody would call you." He said, "Everybody had the same response. Well, hey, pass on my condolences. I can't be there. I'm on the road." And I said, "Well, yeah." He said, "Well, you know, Dad said that so many times. Dad even started saying, I'm probably going to miss my own funeral." And he shut up. And I stood there for a minute, and then it dawned on me, and I started laughing. And I said, "You have got to be kidding." And Rodney goes, "No." He said, "Dad's ashes are somewhere between Dulles, Virginia, and Nashville." He said, "We don't know for sure where. He's not here. That box is empty up there."
And that's something.
The sucker got the last laugh. He missed his own funeral.
Spoke it on himself.
Missed his own funeral. But I told Rodney, I said, I said, I'm glad you told me. I said, because this helps. This is good. And he says, well, you can tell everybody if you want to. I said, it'll be the last thing I do. Oh, yep. I loved it.
Walking up, Brenda and her two boys, they come up there and greeted me and everything, and I told them, I said, and they got some nice-looking boys, you know.
Yeah.
And I told them, I said, well, Brenda, you got some nice-looking boys there. And I said, they must have got that look from their daddy. And she turned and looked at me, and I said, because you still got yours. The boys liked it. She did,
yeah,
too.
Brenda looks the same to me as she did the first time I seen her.
Yeah. You know where she was at whenever they let her know?
She's in Biloxi.
Mississippi at the casino. Yeah. Rodney's son told me that when they called him and told him they thought it was a rib.
Yeah, Rodney told me he thought it was a rib.
Yeah.
And when Brent posted on Facebook, I thought it was a rib. I was hoping it was a rib.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it wasn't. It's going to be a long season out here without him, but he's with me in spirit. I feel him all the time.
Yeah.
I hear his voice in my head all the time. Oh, he was so much fun. He was so much fun.
Yeah, like y'all said the other day, you know, he didn't know any strangers.
Nope. Oh, absolutely not.
No matter where he went, he'd speak up.
And sometimes when you didn't want him to.
When you were with him.
That's right.
That's right. First time you run a show in Mobile with the circus, he's going to take me out to eat. We're going to go to the steakhouse. And he had a little waitress over there that was in there over there at the table. And he had a big thing going on with all of them. And he's just having a ball.
Yeah, he's been doing this for so long with the circus. There's towns we go into that they, you know, he'll go into a Ruby Tuesdays or a Chili's or something like that, and they all swarm to him because they recognize him for the last time he was in town.
Yeah.
And Chris Connors has said that, you know, just about every town that they've gone to, you know, somebody walks up, where's the circus man? That's what they all called him. Where's the circus man? I was out last year. I was in Long Island. Tom King and I, our advanced clown last year, he and I went into a Ruby Tuesdays, and we were sitting there eating, and of course I had all my, you know, my Soul Brothers stuff on, and I was talking to her about the circus coming. She said, I met the human cannonball last year. And I'm thinking, really? Because those guys rarely leave the show. I said, what did he look like? It dawned on me. I said, what did he look like? She said he was an older fellow, about 5'10", with balding with gray hair and wore glasses. I said, yeah, that's our human cannonball, right, Captain West? Because he would tell people all the time he was a lion tamer, or he was the cannonball, or whatever. Put him over, so he would tell them. People always remembered him.
And like, I was in a restaurant one time, me and Tanny Frazier and somebody else is real big, and the waitress comes over and says, what do y'all do? I told him, we're elephant trainers. She says, elephant trainers? Yeah, so, you know, like a lot of people train horses, and they have to break them and ride them and all that stuff. So that's what we do. And we left there with her believing it, too. Tiny looked like he's big enough to train an elephant, you know.
He was big enough to be an elephant.
Yeah, he was.
he was a big fella.
Yeah.
Me and Jody were in Zulu back, it's probably 73 again or 74. Zulu broke his wrist, and they put him in a little cast up to just below his elbow, you know, with his hand up to just below his elbow. So he couldn't work, so they was but he was making him make all the towns. So he rode with me, and I was riding with Jody to Savannah, and Zulu wanted to ride, so Jody let him ride. So we go to Savannah, and we always stopped at Sweat's Barbecue there at Soberton. And we went in there, and we sat down, and we was eating, and the waitress come over, and she looked at all of us, and she said, are y'all wrestlers? And Jody looked up at her and went, no, ma'am, we're professional ballet dancers. And she says, what happened to his arm? Jody said he fell off the stage.
that was another piece of work, Zulu.
Well, I told this at Ronnie's funeral. We used to me and wrestling too, and Ronnie used to park at 138 and 85 at a standard gas station. We'd park behind that gas station every Wednesday to go to Columbus. Because it was the only town during the middle of the week where they used two referees. And me and Ronnie, more times than not, was the two referees. And the guy there at that gas station, he finally asked us one day. He said, look, he said, y'all here every Wednesday. And he said, when I come to work the next day, y'all gone. He said, what's the deal? And we told him we were yacht salesmen, that we had to go to Panama City every Wednesday night to check out our fleet. As soon as we checked it out, we come back home.
He must have been an idiot.
Well, that's not as good as, or as bad as the time that Bobby and Randy Corn convinced a guy that they caught some wild creature down there in the Okefenokee Swamp. And got a free tank of gas.
Well, you know, that's the first trip Randy ever made with me. But I'm going to tell y'all what now. I never told this, but Randy shared something with me here three weeks ago that was, I didn't know. He learned well. Jerry, you know that big old cow there? You stand in front of Kinnett's Dairy there in Columbus?
No, Katie Kinnett. She's still there.
Yeah, well, she's in front of the Best Buy now. She's still there. We come by that thing. We was in Columbus. We went down there for a funeral, and we were coming back, and we went by that thing. And he told me, he said, after I had left the wrestling office and he was still driving a truck, he had took a couple of his buddies with him, and they had to go to Columbus and pick up a cage or take a cage down there or something. He convinced them two boys is with him. That was the world's biggest cow, and they had stuffed it after it died. He said he convinced them that he told them that the farmer had fed it steroids, try to get more milk out of it. And, son, he told me they went for it hook, line, and sinker. So he learned well.
Where was it that Andre climbed up? Was it the Pink Pony he climbed up on the horse?
No, that was the West Texas Music Club there on Cleveland Avenue in Atlanta. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Ronnie told me that story. Said they called him to go out and get him down. Ronnie said he couldn't get him down, so he just went up there and joined him.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I got over there. It looked like a scene out of a King Kong with all them spotlights and stuff shining up there. That sheriff told me, he said, you get him to come down, we won't take him to jail. I climbed up on the roof. I said, brother, you need to come down or we're going to the party. Well, I tell you, another good one happened right there in Hayville. Well, you know, Wahoo was involved in several little incidents right around there. But he was chasing Norvell Austin around there, around LP Pips with a shotgun one night. And we went over and kept him out of jail from that deal. And then they got him for drunk driving over one night. And I sent Randy to get him. And the guy said, He told, I called, Barnett called me, asked me to go get the Indian out of jail. I called Randy because Randy lived closer. I said, you got $200 cash? He goes, yeah. I said, go get Wahoo out of jail. Barnett will give you your money back, TV in the morning. He got over. Randy had $190 in cash and a roll of quarters. And a little old deputy over there told him, says, we can't take that change. And Wahoo screamed and made such a fuss out of that cell in the back when he heard that guy say that, the guy took the quarters just to get rid of him. Randy took him back down to his car, and Randy told him, he said, now follow me. He said, I'm going to show you how to go around. He had an apartment there at Falcons Rest. He said, I'm going to show you how to go around where you don't have to go through downtown Hapeville. And Wahoo said, no problem, I'm right behind you. Randy turned left on Cleveland Avenue to go over the interstate, and Wahoo went right up Stewart Avenue, right in the middle of Hapeville. He blew the horn, waved as he went up the street.
He's the only guy I've seen who worked as a, when he worked as a baby face, had to find a way to dress him.
Oh, yeah.
He had quite a few gun incidents. Didn't he shoot Dick Slater in the leg?
I was going to say, that happened right there on Stewart Avenue at D Ford, right up the street there, yeah. They got in a fight outside the, they got a, some guy somewhere, you know, they got in a fight, and some guy jumped on Slater, and Wahoo'd watched so many cop shows on TV, he thought he could hit that guy in the back of the head with a pistol, and the guy would knock him out, you know, and he hit the guy in the head with the pistol, and the gun went off and shot Slater in the leg. But, you know, it went through the fleshy part, and, you know, we, how we kept that crap out of the paper, I'll never know, but we managed to squash that. Yeah, it's sort of, it was sort of an interesting sight, though, that night over there, seeing him come around that building with that shotgun chasing Norvell Austin.
Norvell crawled under a car, did he?
Yeah, he did. I don't remember exactly what he did. I know he did something.
I think he did.
Yeah, it was a...
Oh, man. Norvell could do some crazy stuff, too, though. Especially if he's herbally medicated.
Yeah. You can ask Wahoo, you got anything for a headache? He had a tackle box, man. He'd open that tackle box up, and it was like one of them Planos. You know, it had, you'd open it up, and it'd have, like, as you folded it all the way open, it'd have, like, three or four little trays that rolled. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
On either side.
So.
Oh, yeah. He'd have pills for all occasions.
He made a lot of money up in Carolina. He gambled it all the time, though. He'd go out and play golf and bet big bucks and lose.
Yeah.
Him and Ric Flair had some matches that they come across that ring, and they had us all circle around the ring, throw them back in if they got out. Then they hit them corners, that whole ring would move. They worked real hard up there.
I think his hardest matches, he and Valentine used to, well, both Johnny and Greg, because he had programs with both of them. He and Johnny Valentine would just wail the tar out of each other. Watching those matches would make you just cringe and be glad you weren't in there with either one of them.
I heard that.
Ooh.
I never had the pleasure of working with either Valentine, but I've had Wahoo's chops and his handprints would be on my chest for 2 days afterwards. He was like Rocket. He didn't know how to pull anything. He just wailed on me. Oh, man.
Darn, that Luther Lindsay chopped you in the throat. It wasn't a chop, really. He jabbed you. You think you had to go get, when he got through with you, you had to go get one of them holes cut in there and talk through your neck. But he's a real nice guy. What a gentleman he was.
You talking about Rocket pulling punches? They booked him in Flash against Jody and Tom and Griffin. They worked a little program down there, and Rocket walked up to them. They had a pretty good match. I think they went Broadway the first time they worked together. And of course, it made, you know, Rocket and Flash became the baby faces. And they got through with the match, and they got back to the dressing room. Rocket went up to Jody and shook his hand. He said, man, I thought we had a good match. What'd you think? Jody looked at him just real serious. He said, I've had easier street fights.
You know, Rocket said that there was a guy that sat ringside or there along there somewhere in Griffin, and he would cuss Rocket every week. And during that program, they were working against the Assassins. He came up to Rocket and said,
I'm never going to say another bad thing about you. And then after that program was over, he went right back to cussing Ron every week, just like he had before.
There used to be a guy here in Montgomery territory. I think it was Ronaldo or something like that. And anyway, there's a guy in Tuscaloosa used to get up there in Blocky, going to the end of the ring. And a lot of times when you come out, and he'd get up in your face, and he'd almost touch things with you. And he's yelling and screaming, and his mouth is open more than it's closed. And he kept on doing that to everybody. And so that Ronaldo got out of the ring. Yeah, that's what it was. Anyway, he got out of the ring one time, and the guy stepped in front of him where he couldn't move and started that. Ronaldo spit in his mouth. that guy thought he was going to die out there.
We had a guy here, there was a guy in Carrollton, and his name was Billy Frick. And he may still be alive, I don't know. But he sat on the back row of the ringside seats by the babyface dressing room. And he would, and Jerry, you might remember him because he wore these real thick glasses with black rims. And anytime he'd get mad about something, he'd jump up and down screaming at the heels, and he'd throw chairs, and he'd beat on chairs. And he'd take his belt off and beat on a chair and just scream and scream and scream. So we were in the ring one night, and Rocket looked at me, and he went, he's Bubba, he said, I've just had about all this guy. I can stand it. He said, you got my back. I said, yeah, let's go. So he rolled out the ring, and I said, get back in this ring. And I rolled out after him and was fussing at him as we went up the aisle. And that guy was back there. Boy, he was just pounding that chair with that belt buckle. And Rocket got back there, and Rocket got right in his face. And when he did, he sat down. He wouldn't move. He wouldn't say a word. Rocket did everything he could to get this guy to get up and say something, and he wouldn't. He just sat there. We turned around, and before we got back to the ring, he was standing in the chair beating it with a bell buckle again. Rock said, just ain't no hope. I said, no, sir, just stay here.
Well, Jerry, you remember that guy?
Yeah.
Bobby, what town was that in?
That was in Carrollton.
You remember that guy? That might be the same guy. What did you think about it? Me and Tom standing out there looking at the crowd and talking. And this boy was down there on the right in about, I guess, 8 or 9 seat rows down. And he got up, and he had a pair of black, and what do you call them, Oxford shoes? It's white and black.
Yeah.
You know? He had them on, and that stuff says, watch this. And that old boy was hollering, screaming at us up there, and over Ernesto looked down his shoes and turned around like he's telling me something. And he said, laugh, Joe, and we turned back around and looked at him and laugh. He had that boy so damn mad, I believe he had fought the back. And he wasn't saying nothing. He just, Tom was good at that stuff.
Tom would get you upset and wouldn't have to do nothing. He just look at you.
I know. he got me one time. We was at the outdoor show. I was trying to crank my motorcycle, and I had a Kawasaki. Didn't have electric start. I'm trying to crank it, and if you don't turn that choke off after you kick it once, you're not going to start it very easy. And I kicked it that one time, and he's standing there talking to somebody right there, and I said, most guys have got electric starter nowadays. And I looked at him, I thought, well, on you. And I forgot to take the choke off, and I couldn't get that motorcycle started for nothing. I had it flooded. And I'm just kicking on that damn thing, and he just looked at me and grinned. But I was so damn teed off then.
He would, you know, Tom was so quiet. He wasn't loud about nothing he did. He was just, you know, very matter of fact with his stuff. We were sitting on the back loading dock at that Warner Robins Civic Center one. I think we ran it on Friday night. It was Dick's Town, and it was Friday night. We were sitting there, and old Sweet Carlson drove a Jeep back before it was popular to drive a Jeep. He had old convertible, you know, convertible Jeep. He had
I remember
big tires and the fancy wheels on it and stuff. and took that dog with him everywhere he went.
That black dog.
That black dog. He pulled up out behind that building. He got out and got his bag started in the building. The dog was just laying on the seat. And Tom says, "Sweet," said, "you left your keys in there." He said, "I ain't worried about them keys." He said, "Well, that dog sitting right there," he said, "ain't nobody going to get nowhere near that Jeep." So Sweet went on in the building. Me and Tom was sitting there, and Tom reached in his pocket, and he gave me $5 or $10. I don't remember. He said, "Walk up front." He said, "Buy me all the hot dogs you can buy for this." And he said, "I don't want nothing on them. Don't even want the bread." He said, "I just want the weenies." He said, "Buy all you can buy and bring them back to me." And I went up there, and whatever he'd give me, I bought as many as I could. It was a double handful. And I come back there, and I handed them to him. And he sat there in that chair, and he started flipping weenies to that dog. And he'd flip him 3 or 4, and then he'd take 3 or 4 steps toward that Jeep and flip him a couple more. Before he got through with them hot dogs, Tom was sitting in that Jeep under the steering wheel, and that dog was eating them hot dogs out of his hand. He fired that Jeep up, and he was going in circles around the parking lot blowing the horn.
I can tell you this story. We was headed somewhere, I think we was headed to Roanoke, Virginia, and seen Carson on the side of the road in his Jeep. And so we was going to stop and make sure he wasn't broke down. He had that dog out there, and he was letting that dog run around a little bit. I guess use the restroom, whatever, bathroom, whatever. So anyway, when we stopped, he wanted to show his dog off. He come that dog, you know, he'd throw a stick out there and tell him to go get it, and he'd get halfway and tell him to halt, and the dog would halt. So anyway, he went through all the routine about come back, and he'd tell him to get on the left side, he'd get on the left side. The dog was well trained. And anyway, he done it twice, went through the routine twice. So we got on the matches that night, and they was talking about his dog, and he said, "Ask Joe." He said, "He saw it," and I said, "Yeah, I sure did." And I said, that's sweet, and I went through the same routine I just told y'all. And I said, about him halting and everything, halfway, and then tell him to go ahead. I said, so whenever he got down to doing it the second time, the dog started for him, and he got halfway, and told him to halt. And I said, that dog kept going. And y'all just have to imagine what the word means, but he used the F word. And he said, "Oh, F." And I said, I told him, dressed him, I said, "That dog backed right up to him." Well, he started acting me. I made him some damn mad. Yeah, Sweet was something else. He left that dog in my house one time. We'd come back the third day, and it was there in Georgia. And he asked me, he said, "Will your wife put out some water for him and throw this food out there for him?" I said, "Yeah." And I said, "We gonna tie him up to that tree over there, or what? We can get underneath something if it's bad weather?" He said, "Oh no, I'm just leaving him here." He says, I said, "Well, he might not be here when you get back." He said, "Dog will be right here when I get back." And he sure was.
Yeah, I heard when he finally retired out of the business, he bought a place here in Griffin. I heard he had an accident with a chainsaw and cut his leg off.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I heard. And then, of course, he's been dead a few years, but or a lot of years now, I guess. But they said that somebody told me he had a hunting or had an accident with a chainsaw and cut part of his leg off.
He does some weird things. He sure was devastated when that wife left him. He was real messed up. He was real happy with that woman. Of course, most of us was happy with our wives because, you know what? We need to give them women some credit because they put up a lot of stuff with us being in this business.
Yep.
They put up a whole lot of stuff. So.
I said, especially your wives. Tell the story about the little boy wanting to carry your bag at the airport.
Yeah, that's at Atlanta Auditorium. And I didn't want her to walk right by me so nobody'd bother in there sitting down watching the matches. So I had her walking several feet behind me. And that little boy come up and said, Mr. Turner, can I carry you back in? I said, hell no, let her walk. I got to walk.
That's a good one.
It didn't get over to do with her. She reminded me of the several times. But you know, I have a tendency to say things without thinking. It's just like the other day, Sandra. We was all sitting around talking, and I said something about the bags. You know, I said, you know, I'm talking about paper bags. And she said, what are you talking about, bags? I said, Sandra, I'm not talking about them under the eyes. I'm talking about paper bags. So I don't get over sometimes.
Yeah, I would imagine not.
Yeah.
Me and my wife was having a serious conversation one time about if it ever came down to it, you know, about being put on life support or anything. And she said, well, if I ever get to where my brain's not functioning, you just tell them to let me go. So I reached over and picked up the phone and was dialing 911. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to tell them, come on out here and pick you up. She failed to see the humor in it.
Yeah, I like that one. But Sandra and I first got together, she has three girls. I kept telling me about, you know what, you don't treat people right. And I said, what do you mean I don't treat people right? It's just like when you go to the bathroom and take a leak, says, you know, you're supposed to put the toilet seat back down. I said, can't you at least do that? And I said, sure, I'll be happy to do it. He said, you will? I said, yeah, as long, you know, got equal rights now, so why don't you put it back up when y'all get through? They know I joke around a lot, so they don't pay much attention to this.
Jerry doesn't joke with his wife, because Kathy's got those ice skates with the sharp blades on them. She can rip out real quick.
I see her sharpening on them all the time. I don't
know. I think so. She probably sits and watches TV with a file in her hand.
She does. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Jerry's got something on all of us. He's still married to his first wife. None of the rest of us can say that.
No, this is my second wife.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we've been married 41 years.
Well, I didn't know that. I just knew you married the ice skater, and I never knew you were married before.
Well, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I try not to remember that.
Well, I was married the first time for 10 years, and I kept telling Sue, my second wife, I said, I'm a 10-year man now. And when 10 years she left, I told her, I said, well, I kind of liked you. I had to go give you a little extension on your time. She said, I'll serve my time, thank you.
She got paroled, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I was married to mine for 15, or just shy of 15 years. And I kept telling her when she turned 40, I said, okay, that's it. Happy birthday, but it's time now. She said, time for what? I said, I'm going to trade you in on two 20-year-olds. She didn't, like Bobby said, she failed to see the humor in that, too.
Yeah, I know that got like a fat rat, didn't it?
Well, he'd be like my wife. She told me I wasn't wired for 220, so it didn't matter.
Wait till you get my age, you won't be wired at all.
Well, me and Miss Debbie celebrated 26 2 weeks ago, so
that's good.
Congratulations.
She told me, she said, if I ever do anything to make her mad enough to leave, she's gonna stay and make my life a living hell, and that's a quote.
That's what I told my grandson. I did got married. He's married about a year. And he says, what's it like being married a long time, Papa? And I said, well, Ray, I'm going to tell you like it is, son. I said, when you're young and you're dating them, they think you're the best looking thing in the world. They think you're smart. They make you think you're the smartest person in the world.
and they'll do anything you want. But once you get them licenses, they'll spend the rest of their life getting even with you. He said, I think that's true. It's already happened.
Oh, man. Well, guys, we got about 5 minutes left, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Nothing planned for next week yet. We will be on the air, but nothing planned at this point. So we'll
get a report from Mo, our traveling correspondent.
Yeah, we'll have those weekly now. So
his first show is Saturday night, and just to tell you how this thing's going, and without revealing too much, he sent advance tickets to his first four shows. All four shows have called back and said they were out of tickets. They needed more tickets. This is like going back to Mayberry. It's gonna be good. I think it's gonna be good for him. And those guys out there that's gone with him are gonna get a taste of what it was like to really be in the wrestling business, because he's running them the right way, and I think they're gonna do good. This may be a good thing for him to come back to in the future. He's building some good relationships, so. Looks promising.
That is, if Ann McGowan doesn't beat him to death for running Jeff while he's out there.
Oh, I'm telling you. God, love that boy.
Oh, man. I'm sure Scrappy's getting an earful every night from Annie.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure, and he's only been gone 2 days.
No wonder Scrappy is on the night shift for the next couple of weeks. Oh, man. Well, guys, you got anything to plug?
No, sir.
Get out of here? You guys go see Todd Terry on Toppy Island.
Having a benefit thing for Brad Armstrong's family in Milton, Florida, Saturday.
Now, that's over and above the thing that they're doing at Chill Highway Park, right? Because they're doing one there, too.
Yeah, that's
so
separate.
They already done that one. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Oh, good. Well, good call. So everybody turn out. I wonder if is Charlie going on himself, gimmicks?
I don't know. I'm going.
Not Are that you? I know of. He hadn't mentioned it.
Well, Joe's going to sell gimmicks, so Joe would get there first. Charlie would be locked out anyway, so.
I told Charlie the other day, I said we need to set up a gimmick table. We need to go with Bo. And he said, will you go with me? I said, yeah, I'll go with you. I said, tell you what. I said, you go ahead and take off. I said, I'll meet you in Kansas City. He told me, he said, nope. He said, I'll pick you up at home. He said, I don't want any loose ends.
I was gonna say we need to pull a rib on him, but he's on the line listening to us. So I'm not gonna get into it.
He can't hear.
That's true. We need to have somebody do what Rocket had somebody do to Flash. Show him asking for his license, his
yeah.
vendor's license.
Yeah. Problem is he's got one.
Does
he? He has a City of Atlanta business license, or he did have. So I'm assuming he still does.
Well, that doesn't work in Chipley, Florida, though. So.
Chipley, Florida. Well, I don't know.
Oh, man.
Might run into Soto in Chipley.
What's that?
I said you might run into Soto in Chipley visiting his friends over there.
That's too far to go for.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. I can't even get him to go over to near the state line to visit Bill, much less go to Chipley. But, well, guys, we are out of time. And, Joe, I appreciate you joining us. Bo, if you're listening, I appreciate you joining us. And Jerry and Bobby, as always, it's my honor to work with you guys every week. So we'll get together and try my honor on again next week.
Sounds good. Have a good week, guys.
Good night.
All right.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast.
production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.